The Life of General Belisarius, The Battle for Rome, Part 4. Now, after the last battle with the Goths around the walls of Rome, Byzantine soldiers were now reduced to about 5,000 men, which in the epoch of the era that he was in was thought to be inadequate for the defense of a single camp, let alone a whole city. In a letter to Justinian written at this period and still extant, Belisarius strongly urges the necessity of ample reinforcements. He relates his past successes, which he modestly ascribes to his fortune rather than to his merit, and observes that the numerical superiority of the barbarians may at last prevail. He beseeches the emperor not to forsake and sacrifice the citizens of Rome who had endangered their own security to show forth their attachment to his cause. Quote, "For my part," he said in conclusion, "I know my duty, am ready to lay down my life in defense of your empire. So long as I survive, fear no surrender of Rome. But it is for you to reflect how far my death in such a situation could forward or assist your service." End of quote. These representations had their effect in Constantinople, and orders in compliance with them were issued by Justinian. A squadron of Hunnish and Slavonian cavalry had been embarked at the close of the last year under Martin and Valerian for the relief of Belisarius, but the damage or the apprehension of a storm induced them to suspend their voyage and winter quietly in Greece. They reached Rome in safety from the Campanian coast 23 days after the battle, April the 22nd, 537 AD, but amounted to no more than 1,600 men. A little more diligence on their part would have saved the town and harbor of Porto, of which of great importance to the Romans will clearly be perceived by a reference to the nature of the ground. The Tiber, which at its mouth forms an island about 2 miles both in length and breadth, was defended on the northern banks by a fortress surnamed the Port of Rome, and on the southern side of the town, Ostia. The former now bears the name of Porto, and has been fortified with the greatest of care and connected with Rome by a stately ancient road, which followed the course of the Tiber and was about 18 miles in length. As soon as merchandise and stores were disembarked at Porto, it was customary to load them in boats already waiting for that purpose and tow them by the labor of oxen against the current of the river. Ostia had formerly been likewise a fortified city, but it had declined into an open village, and its road to Rome of 16 miles, which passed far from the windings of the Tiber, afforded no assistance in navigation of transports. Goods could not be conveyed to Rome from Ostia without great difficulty. Besides, which meant the walls and shadow harbor of the station rendered it almost useless. The fortress on the Tuscan bank was therefore of the utmost consequence to Belisarius for his communication with the sea, and according to the opinion of Procopius, 300 soldiers would have been fully sufficient for its maintenance. But even this handful of men could not be spared from the diminished garrison of Rome. On their part, the Goths, disappointed in their hopes of carrying the city by assault, had resolved to make famine their auxiliary, and seized Porto on the third day from their defeat. All maritime convoys of provisions were now at an end. Nor were the granaries of the city sufficiently well stored to render this cessation indifferent. The cowardly desertion of the Milvian Bridge, which hastened the investment of Rome by 20 days, had baffled the projects of Belisarius for completing his supplies. Foreseeing that in his circumstances Porto could not be maintained, he also perceived the necessity of vigorous measures to anticipate the impending distress. On the last day of March, he commanded the immediate departure of a great number of the women and children, for whose reception a secure retreat was prepared in Campania. A long procession of melancholy exiles crowded the Appian Way, and the consternation of visages in his late defeat allowed them a safe and unmolested passage. It was also in reality an act of kindness to withdraw the weaker share of the people from suffering which their presence would have aggravated, and which even men had scarcely sufficient firmness to endure. From the arrival of the reinforcements under Martin and Valerian, though far less than those he had expected, Belisarius was enabled by frequent attacks to harass the troops of the enemy and to exercise his own. No deficiencies in the warfare or equipment of the Goths escaped his watchful attention, or were left unimproved by his military skill. The Gothic cavalry was armed with swords and lances, and was fit only for close combat. Their archers fought on foot, unprovided with defensive armor, and rarely venturing outside of the ranks of the heavy infantry. In three successive sallies, the loss of Goths amounted to no less than 4,000 of their bravest soldiers, and the Byzantine troops were so much elated with the success as earnestly to press on their commanders a general engagement. Well aware how much the barbarians still outnumbered them, Belisarius could not afford this rash request, and preferred the slower but much more secure expedients of gradually wasting the forces of the enemy by well-timed and repeated skirmishes. Yet when the loud clamor of the soldiers was added to the impatience of the Roman citizens, eager for a speedy decision of the war in favor of either party, he perceived the necessity of yielding. To have continued his opposition would have alienated the respect, the affection, and perhaps the obedience of his soldiers. It was his object, however, in complying with their request, to render it less hurtful by carefully providing resources for defeat and enabling the army to withdraw on the first check and with little loss. Beneath the safe shelters of the walls, he fixed on the Salarian gate as a point from whence he would sally with all of his cavalry, leaving his infantry, as were very few in number, to line the ramparts in his absence. Some of them, however, entreated and obtained permission to share in the battle, having pleaded the ancient glories of Roman legions. Still, all of his forces were thus required for the main attack. Belisarius had no effectual means of restraining the Goths encamped on the opposite shore, and had cause for apprehension lest their numerous squadrons should cross the river and reinforce the remainder of their countrymen, it being of the utmost consequence to prevent this junction. The general, stationed without the walls, near the sepulchre of Hadrian, had a large multitude of newly enlisted Roman artisans and volunteers who possessed neither the discipline nor the experience, but who might imitate the array of soldiers. This unwarlike rabble, joined with some Moorish cavalry, was instructed not to advance beyond the foot of the ramparts, in the hope that this formidable aspect from afar might deceive and delay the barbarians. Thus having made his disposition, Belisarius issued forth against the Goths, which he found prepared to receive him. They encountered his army close in front of their encampments, and the conflict which ensued was long and obstinate. The advantage seemed first to be at the side of the Byzantines, and many of the barbarians fell, but their places were instantly supplied by fresh troops, so that their numbers in the field underwent no apparent diminution. On the other side of the Tiber, the stratagem of Belisarius was also successful for a time. The Goths were withheld at a respectable distance, and in momentary expectation of an attack from the supposed appearance of a large army marshaled before them, at length the Roman recruits, emboldened by the hesitation of the enemy, which they foolishly mistook for cowardice, forgot their instructions and ventured on a charge. The barbarians yielded at the first onset, but soon rallied against such raw and unskilled adversaries, who had wasted the precious moments of surprise in pillage, and who accordingly were driven back with great loss within the walls. Meanwhile, the forces commanded by Belisarius in person began to gradually yield. Their retreat grew into a flight, and according to the observation of Procopius, the battle, which had commenced before the entrenchments of the besiegers, was concluded beneath the ramparts of the cities. The Romans were thrown into the utmost disorder and only preserved from entire defeat by the prudence of Belisarius, who led back within the gates his army, much dispirited, humbled, but not materially impaired. So he went out and did the battle as his troops wanted to do, but he's able to keep them together and bring them back into the city, and we'll continue with this battle for Rome. Now the sources for this, the Wars of Justinian by Procopius, Short History of Byzantium by Norwich, The Byzantine Art of War by Decker, Byzantine Armies 324 to 1453 by Turnbull, Byzantium's Early Centuries by Norwich, and The Life of Belisarius by Mahone. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.